This is Jim Inkster. You are listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number outside the area. 877-217-5757. And you may reach us by email, inkstershow@wrkf.org. Michelle Southern is producing today, and we're glad to have Michelle at the helm and Bob Mann in the guest chair. He is a professor of journalism and mass communication at the Manship School, where he has been since 2006. And it was on this date 9 years ago that Bob was scheduled to be a guest on this show and did not show up. What happened that day?
Yeah, a little woman named Katrina blew into New Orleans and had us all distracted. It was quite a day. I was thinking about that this morning. What I was doing on this day 9 years ago was much more stressful and a whole lot more painful for a lot of people than it is today. It's really great to go down to New Orleans and see that city coming back in so many ways. This time last year, we weren't sure whether New Orleans would ever come back, and it's great to see that with all its problems that it's still alive.
Still a great city.
Yes.
Crown jewel of Louisiana. And Bob was there rather than in the WRKF studios on this date in 2005. And he was working at that time as the communications director for Governor Kathleen Babineau Blanco. And you since then have become a political commentator and columnist and professor, and much of your missives over the last few years have been directed at our fearless leader, Governor Bobby Jindal. You're not a big fan of his.
No, I'm not. And you can read my columns and find out why. But I think that if somebody were to ask me, what's your main problem with Jindal, Governor Jindal, I would say that my biggest beef with him is that he's used his position as governor to run for president, that his eye has always, from almost the first day in office, has always been on another office, either trying to get one of the Republican nominees like John McCain or Mitt Romney to appoint him as his nominee for vice president, or now running for president. But his eye has always been on national office, and that has influenced the way that he's governed in Louisiana. And it's often been about appealing to the most conservative voters in Iowa, New Hampshire, South Carolina, those early primary states, than it has been with Louisiana. And I think this Common Core fight is probably the most crystal clear representation of Jindal's political agenda.
You wrote a column recently in the Lead, as I'm looking at it online, "A Dupe or a Liar? Governor Jindal's Frivolous Federal Common Core Lawsuit." And another one that's even more explosive from Robert Mann, "Rick Perry's crimes pale in comparison to Bobby Jindal's." Are you calling him a criminal?
No, and if you read the column, I make it very clear that I don't think that Rick Perry nor Bobby Jindal have committed crimes. In fact, the article and another piece that I put on my blog was in a way defending Rick Perry, because I think that is a shocking abuse of the criminal justice system in Texas, and criminalizing politics in a way that I think is destructive. And I said we ought to treat that like Ebola and don't let it cross our our borders, because it's very bad for our politics to let it become so vitriolic. But try to put people in jail because you have a political difference with them. If the people of Texas don't like what Rick Perry is doing and disagree with his vetoes, they ought to impeach him. And I said the same thing about Jindal, that I don't think that what he's done on Common Core is a violation of law, but I do think it's a lot worse than anything Rick Perry has done in Texas.
Well, you have commented about Governor Jindal putting his friends in high places, and there's no doubt he has done that. And here's a guy who said he was going to give us the gold standard for ethics. But your former boss, Kathleen Blanco, did that kind of thing too, didn't she?
Every governor, every president appoints people to office. I mean, you know, Edwin Edwards famously said that you have this list of people. You categorize people. You have qualified friends, unqualified friends, and you have qualified enemies and unqualified enemies. And Edwards always says, "I'm still working on the first category." And I think most politicians are like that, and that is a reality of politics. But I would argue that in many cases, Jindal has been appointing his unqualified friends to these offices.
Well, the LSU board, for example, has 16 members and 15 white men, one black female.
Right.
Does that reflect the demography of the great state of Louisiana?
Yeah, and the most recent appointee, who's a fine guy, Jim McCrary, former Republican congressman from North Louisiana, from Shreveport, who no longer lives in Shreveport, who's a Washington lobbyist, who gave Jindal his start in politics as an intern in his Washington office. He certainly owes McCrary a lot, but using the LSU Board of Supervisors as a way to reward a political patron, I think most people wouldn't have a problem with that if there was also some diversity on that board. But you know, I wondered, is there not an African-American or female lobbyist from Louisiana who Jindal owes a favor to that he couldn't put on that board? Because we've got a problem at LSU, I think, and that is it's not as diverse a student body as it ought to be, and we have trouble because of Southern University here attracting African-American students to LSU, and you know, the leadership of this university, I think King Alexander, I think, is very committed to diversity, but you look at the board, you look at his bosses, they're all a bunch of older white businessmen, and
guys like you and me.
Yeah, and I don't have anything against white men. I'm one of them, as are you. But I do think that, you know, the Constitution.
We're old white guys.
The state Constitution actually says that the makeup of the Board of Regents, the overall governing board of higher education, should reflect the state's diversity. The Constitution doesn't say that about LSU, but I think that a governor who really wanted to encourage diversity in higher education would have a more diverse board. Now, in Governor Jindal's defense, when Kathleen Blanco, my former boss, did not have a much more diverse board either, that probably should be put on the table. I think that the LSU Board of Supervisors has always been a group of people who are close to the governor, but this board, I think, has been closer and more beholden to a governor than probably any other board in recent memory in our generation.
Well, I recall 28 years ago when I was covering board meetings quite regularly because of they were constantly changing personnel, namely coaches at LSU. You had Ruth Miller, had Marianne Freeman. This was when Edwin Edwards was governor. The student member at that time was Angel Graves, sister of Garrett Graves.
Oh, is that right?
Oh, how the world turns.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah, yeah. And now we have one black female. That's it. Otherwise, got 15 old white guys who are on the LSU Board of Supervisors. And Governor Jindal also has no black cabinet secretaries.
Yeah, the one he did, he fired her and replaced her with a man who he paid twice as much money. So yeah, it's a problem. I think diversity is an issue in this administration, and it's an issue in every organization, from our faculty to the leadership across the board in state government. Diversity is an issue, is a challenge, and it's not easy. It's often not easy to build a diverse team, but you've got to commit yourself to trying, and that's one of the problems I have with the way that President Alexander was selected. I'm not convinced at all that there was a diverse group of people who were considered for that job. I think King Alexander is the right person at the right time for LSU. But I also think, as the highest paid public official in the state of Louisiana, we have a right to see, you know, who else was considered for that job. And was there any diversity, or did the basically all-white LSU board choose King Alexander from an all-white male pool of applicants? And I think probably the answer is yes.
Fielding King Alexander, great name. And so far, even you, Bob Mann, who questioned him from the get-go, you say you like the King.
Well, I do. And here's what I questioned about him. I wondered, knowing how slavishly loyal this board is to Jindal, how beholden they are to Jindal, I wondered why anyone who had any independence, who had any self-respect, would take the job under the conditions that seemed to be at play. So many people had been fired at LSU for standing up to Jindal. It seems, and I don't know because he's not told me and I'm not asking, but it seems that either the Jindal people, through Jindal directly or through the board gave Alexander a lot more autonomy than other leaders at LSU have had, but it doesn't appear that this man feels like he's working for Bobby Jindal, which is a refreshing change in the leadership of LSU.
Well, I think Jindal, despite the criticism that's been placed upon him by some, including yours truly on occasion, has hired some good people in Stephen Morey, for example, I think was a good hire. King Alexander and John White was a good hire, but what happened to that?
Well, I'm not sure I would agree with you that John White is a good hire, but no, I'm not saying everybody. He's got really good people working for him, and some of them are friends of mine, and I'm not going to name those people because it would only hurt them. But no, I'm not saying that everybody he's hired is incompetent or far from it. He's got good people working for him. My main problem with Jindal is not his personnel, but his policies, his overarching policies, which I think are largely geared toward his presidential ambitions and not to serving the people of the state of Louisiana. And Common Core is the latest proof of that.
Yeah, well, there's no doubt that he wants to be president, and we've talked about that, and it's not like it's a government secret. Here's a man who will go to the border of Mexico but won't walk five blocks to Scotland, Bill.
Or won't go to Bayou Corn. Or won't go...
He went there once.
I don't think he actually went there. I think he met with some of the residents, but I don't think he's actually been to Bayou Corn. I might be wrong, but he certainly has not devoted the attention to those kind of issues. I'm waiting for him to start addressing personally the issue we've got with the brain eating amoebas that are affecting drinking water, St. John Parish, right? Mm-hmm. And you know, I haven't seen him there. You know, if he has time to go to Iowa, New Hampshire, and all these other places, the Mexican border, you'd think he'd find time to turn his attention to an issue like this, which is making national news.
And then there was a report this week that two of the five most violent cities in America over the last decade have been Baton Rouge and New Orleans, and two of the top three AIDS cities in terms of the proliferation of the dread disease are Baton Rouge and New Orleans. You never hear the governor talk about those things. That's not consistent with the Louisiana miracle that he is touting.
Well, the fact is there is no Louisiana miracle, and it's a mirage. And here's what I've said in my column and other places is that the main problem I have with a Jindal candidacy for president, with seeing how it's successful, is that I don't think anyone can name one policy innovation of Bobby Jindal that he can go to any other state and say, here's something that I thought of, here's something that I devised and apply to Louisiana that I recommend to you in your state. You might say, well, his voucher and his education reform proposals. Well, those were not his ideas. Those are old Republican ideas that have been floating around for a generation that he dusted off and put into practice. And you may like them, but you can't say that there is one policy innovation that Bobby Jindal authored that he can say, you know, your state ought to do this. There is not one. And the idea that Jindal is this innovative policy wonk, I think, is a fantasy.
All right. Leslie notes that Robert Barham, Wildlife and Fisheries, was a good appointee. I'd go along with that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, Robert, great appointee. Robert Barham was a fine state senator and a very good person. I probably name most of his cabinet. They're probably capable people. That is not the issue. But the question I think some people have is...
All right. Hold on. Yep. You're on fire.
All right.
We'll return with Bob in 90 seconds. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge, 297-5633 or 877-217-5757. Bob Mann, LSU professor and at one time a Pulitzer Prize finalist for the fine work he's done as a historian. He is talking about then and now as he reviews the landscape of Louisiana. And Governor Bobby Jindal is in control for another few months, a little over a year. He'll be turning over the leadership of the state to somebody else. Who do you think it'll be?
Well, if I had to bet the house, it would probably be David Vitter, who is, campaigning more effectively than anybody else for the job right now. Mm-hmm. But I don't think that's. I wouldn't bet the house on it.
Well, speaking of the House, and we will go to the phone lines in just a moment, 297-5633. Today, and their ads, there's certainly a push now for Congressman Cassidy, and he's taking aim at Mary Landrieu's $2.5 million home in Washington, and saying that she does not have a residence in Louisiana. She lists her parents' home as her address. Is that a story?
Well, it's a story. Yeah, it's absolutely a story. I don't think that it's the kind of thing that's going to captivate the voters of this state, because I think if you if I were Landrieu, I would say, you know, it's interesting that of the three major candidates in this field, I'm the only one who was actually born in Louisiana.
She was not. She was born in Arlington,
well, that's
Virginia.
True. Okay, but the only one who grew up in Louisiana. Let's put it that way.
No, Bill Cassidy grew up here. He grew up here. He did. He moved here pretty quickly from Highland Park, Illinois. But he was not born in Louisiana.
I think that,
and neither was Manus.
Yeah, I think to say that Landrieu is not a Louisiana resident or not a not of Louisiana is going to be a hard sell. I think in this race, the people that charge will appeal to are the people who've already pretty much decided not to vote for her. So it's more of a distraction, I think, than an issue. Pat Roberts in Kansas, the candidate, the Republican incumbent in Kansas, is going through the same thing, and it's caused him some problems too, but I think that Roberts probably the main reason that Roberts has problems is because he hasn't spent enough time in Kansas. No one can say that about Mary Landrieu.
Okay, well, Bill Cassidy lives in a very nice home too, but it's in Baton Rouge on Dalrymple Drive, a stone's throw from the LSU campus. It's not gated. You can walk up and say hello to the congressman. Yeah. I did the other day. Unfortunately, I haven't had a chance to say hello to him on the show in a while, but maybe that will change. But the other day, it was a listener who kind of offered a devilish prospect, and that's Cassidy loses a tight one to Landrieu. Vitter wins the governorship, and then he appoints Cassidy to succeed him in the U.S. Senate, so you'll have Cassidy and Landrieu.
You could. You know, the other scenario is that Landrieu loses the Senate race
and
runs in 2016 with Hillary Clinton on the ballot and either beats David Vitter or who beats whoever took Vitter's place.
That's true.
I think that is as likely a scenario as anything.
That would be interesting. And certainly she's in Washington. She could become a high-paid lobbyist, too, like your former boss, John Berlinger Bro.
Yeah, that's right.
297-5633, Dan downtown. Dan, good morning. You're on the air with Bob.
Yes. Do you think that Jindal's lawsuit this week against Obama is just a Hail Mary pass to gain attention? You know, because you've got competition from Cruz, Rand Paul, Chris Christie.
I do. I think that's exactly what it is. I don't think it's a legitimate attempt to litigate this issue. You read that lawsuit. Jindal claims that somehow he and these states were coerced into applying for this Race to the Top money, which obligated them to adopt Common Core standards, and conveniently leaves out the fact that Jindal enthusiastically applied for that money, led the effort to enlist the state in Common Core, put out a press release in November of 2009 bragging on the state's application for Race to the Top, and even in the press release said this is a voluntary program. And now somehow he was coerced. It's clearly an effort to try to raise his profile on the national level. Nothing else has really worked. He's still in the low single digits in all the polls. Most recently, one yesterday released in Iowa. He's not making a mark on this race, and he's got to do something. And this is, it's a Hail Mary pass. It's costing the taxpayers about $300,000.
Mm-hmm. Lynn and Melrose. Hi, Lynn. You're on with Bob.
Yes. Jim?
Yes, you're on the air.
Good morning, Jim and Bob. I know I'm not the only one who's very concerned about the imminent loss of the Inkster show on WRKF coming up in November. And I wonder, Bob, if you're not in a perfect position in the Manship School to maybe recruit someone to attempt to replace Jim.
All right. I think Bob would be the
Jim,
one.
Jim, you're irreplaceable. Bob, that's all I can say. You're irreplaceable.
Bob,
you cannot
Bob's
be replaced.
Bob's the guy. I'm starting a campaign right now for Bob Mann as the 9 to 10 host.
How much does the job pay, by the way?
How much? Well, nothing from nothing. Okay, Randy and Zachary. Randy, good morning. You're on with Bob.
Yes, Governor General's lawsuit. I tell you who's going to win, the lawyers. Thanks.
Oh, absolutely. The lawyers are going to win. And one lawyer in particular, Jimmy Faircloth, is Jindal's lawyer of choice, who makes more money losing lawsuits than any lawyer in the United States. He's the most successful loser in legal circles in Louisiana. And but you know, this is what I think is interesting about this is that when the BSEE board, the elementary board of elementary and secondary education, wanted to hire a lawyer to defend itself against what they believe was Jindal's attempt to dismantle their authority to run the education system in the state, Jindal wouldn't even let him hire a lawyer pro bono. Eventually he did, but he wouldn't let them hire a lawyer. He goes out and unilaterally pays Jimmy Faircloth and several other law firms over $300,000 potentially to represent him in this frivolous lawsuit that's essentially a campaign document. And you know, the Division of Administration and his Commissioner of Administration have no problem with that. That tells you all you need to know.
Rick Causey writes, it never ceases to amaze me how someone so un-Louisiana, so uncharismatic, so uncreative, and so unappealing to the ears ever became our governor. Is he talking about Buddy Romer?
No, I don't think he's talking about Romer. Yeah, I agree. I don't know. And I think we're about to find out how unappealing Jindal is. I mean, we're already seeing it in the polls. I mean, he's not making any mark whatsoever on this race.
Not yet.
Which explains, and Jindal has tried everything to get the attention of voters in Iowa. Maybe this Common Core lawsuit will do it. Maybe this will do it. That's what he certainly hopes it will do. But I think he's got to do more than, you know, sue the president over Common Core to jump out of the pack of group of Republican leaders who have a lot more political skills than he does.
Well, today the governor, I see, has just issued a statement about the 9th anniversary of Hurricane Katrina. He was in Congress at the time representing that area, and it's a very long statement, so I'll unfortunately be unable to read it. But he does say, we're proud of the resilience of our people after this devastating storm, and we will never stop fighting to make sure New Orleans remains one of the greatest cities in the world. Has he done that in his 6.5 years as governor? Has he strived to make New Orleans one of the great cities of the world?
You'd have to ask Mitch Landrieu about that. I haven't seen Governor Jindal spend a lot of time pouring time and resources into New Orleans. I'm sure he hasn't ignored it, but I've never seen it as a priority for him.
Well, other governors were everywhere. Edwin Edwards, certainly, like him or not, he was everywhere. You see him in restaurants. He was certainly a people person. This governor is he's a lot like the president. He's an introverted man and an extroverted job.
Yeah, he is, and he's spending most of his time outside of Louisiana, or at least a great amount of his time outside of Louisiana, on other pursuits. So to the extent that other governors have paid attention to Louisiana by just being here and doing the job, I don't think you can say that about Jindal.
He might be able to give us some tips on restaurants in Des Moines and places like that. You know, Nashua, New Hampshire, maybe.
There are actually good restaurants in Des Moines. I've spent some time there. It's a nice place. I don't blame him for wanting to go to Des Moines, but
but when we're going to let Bob go, he's got another appointment. But Barack Obama in 2000, the year 2000, he ran for Congress and he got 29% of the votes against Bobby Rush, a Black Panther.
Right.
And then how many years later? 8 years later, he's leader of the free world. People who discount Bobby Jindal, now it's the odds are against anybody. They were against Obama, but it's not inconceivable that he could catch fire. But I think, getting back to what Rick was saying, does he have the personal magnetism that obviously Obama has to pull this off?
Well, no, that's the distinction I would make between, yeah, they're both obscure politicians, and probably Obama was more obscure than Jindal was at that point in the race. But I think that the difference is what you've nailed it, or at least one of them, is that that Jindal does not have the personal magnetism. But I also believe that what Obama did was put together a world-class political team around him, people who really knew what they were doing. You know, I've seen no evidence that Jindal's pulling together much more than a group of the same cronies that he's had around him in Louisiana to run his presidential campaign. And you know,
but
that's
Bill Clinton had a lot of Louisiana guys. Well, he had one Louisiana guy and a lot of Arkansas guys, and George Stephanopoulos, who was a doomsayer. Every time a scandal broke, he would say it's over.
Yeah, but Bill Clinton had James Carville, who was not a crony, and they were not cronies or friends before he hired him. He went out and hired the best political campaign manager in the business, in James Carville, who happened to be from a neighboring state, but they were not cronies. I don't see Jindal putting together, you know, he may prove me wrong, and the people he's got around him may prove to be political, suddenly show their political genius in ways they haven't thus far. But so far, I don't see that developing. But I think the personal magnetism, the charisma, the skills that we all see in Bill Clinton, for example, are just not there.
And
in
Obama.
And in Obama.
And even in W.
Well, and George W. Bush and people like Rand Paul. You look at the current field, Rick Perry, I think, has got a lot more personal appeal.
I like Kinky Friedman's line that when he dies, he wants his ashes spread in Rick Perry's hair. Well, I know you got to go, but happy birthday to you.
Thank you, Jim.
And it's a few days away from Bob, but he and in close proximity of two men born in September of 1958, Bob Mann and Mike Edmondson. So
that's right.
A public relations professional, you might be able to have a few words of encouragement for the superintendent. Thank you, Bob.
Thank you, Jim.
Appreciate it. Take care. And as noted, the last few days we've talked about the unfortunate death of Scott Rogers, the well-known host of the Around Town show, who was on this program May 3rd, 2011. Yesterday, two men who claimed they were involved with him, and one of whom has been mentioned. Well, actually, both are mentioned in today's Baton Rouge Advocate, and thanks to Ben Wallace and Terry Jones for their front-page story that includes references from this show yesterday. They claim they were sexually involved with Scott Rogers when he was in his early 30s, and they were in their early teens in Great Britain. Scott left Great Britain after being acquitted on one count, and a jury hung on five others in a sexual case in which he was the target. He was the defendant. 13-day trial. Came to Texas and then ended up in Baton Rouge, where he's been the last 14 years before his death. 2 days ago, 12:40 in the afternoon, at his spacious St. Gabriel compound. On this show, and this is one of the ironies of many, Scott died of a gunshot wound. Matthew Hodgkins, his longtime associate, fired the shot, as an autopsy indicated, and killed Scott and then shot himself, and he is on life support at Our Lady of the Lake. But on this show, Scott expressed his devotion to the Second Amendment as a new American citizen. And we heard one snippet from Scott yesterday. Let's hear from Mr. Rogers once again.
No, I think you should be able to have that weapon, and I think it's part of your rights and my rights as an American citizen. I think what Jim is saying is there an alternative? Is that's what we're discussing. I don't think there is. I think once you have... This is embedded into our society now, Jim. And if you do something to take away guns, you're only going to take them away from the law-abiding citizens, because the criminals, by definition, aren't going to abide by the law.
All right. Now, Michelle, do we have another one from Scott? Let's go.
My daughter, Kimberly, Jim, as you know, she's 26. She's well-trained in weaponry as well. And I think as long as people are trained, I think that's the crucial element, so that we don't gun-toted around. But in addition to that, I think we should be talking about what should we do about the criminals, not what should we do about the law-abiding citizens having weaponry and arms, which is part of our Constitution. Our Bill of Rights was put there for a reason.
Yeah, yesterday's show prompted many emails, and I must say, of the hundreds of emails and messages I've received, I've not received one negative note about the show, which of course was a gripping and somewhat tragic hour with two people who claim to have been abused by Scott, starting at very young ages. Rachel Hebert, who is the executive director of Sexual Trauma Awareness and Response in Baton Rouge, writes, "I heard your show featuring two victims that were allegedly abused by former local celebrity Scott Rogers. What an intense and difficult show. The words of your guests were incredibly haunting and disturbing. I just wanted to reach out and express thanks for covering this issue, and ask that if you are able, please promote our local 24/7 hotline to your guests in case they are triggered, impacted, upset, and they are aware that they have resources and support in our community 24/7. That number that Rachel provides is 225-383-RAPE, 225-383-RAPE. And I might read at least one other email here. Here's one from Benjamin Lanier Neighbors. Thank you for providing an honest, though inescapably raw, airing of the Rogers tragedy, which has proved to be multiple tragedies that came to a head yesterday. There's a Scott most in the area can't help but like, but there were obviously other Scots who were far from endearing. I'm confident this was an incredibly difficult show for you to do. I'm afraid, though, writes Benjamin, that some people will conflate pedophilia with homosexuality. If you would, in the days ahead, please make it clear that the two aren't synonymous. Thank you as much for your journalistic integrity. Sincerely, Ben Lanier Neighbors. And certainly that would be an unfortunate conclusion that some might make. I hope not, but some might make that this was some way related to Scott's orientation, and obviously this had nothing to do with the fact that Scott was a gay man. This had something to do with something that went terribly wrong within his heart and soul, and his behavior of more than two decades indicates that he was living a double life, and a double life that was not exposed until he died. And in the last few days, Scott, who was literally a pillar of the community, a sheriff's deputy, an ordained minister, the face and voice of the Better Business Bureau of this city, a man who is synonymous with nonprofits, invited them on his show. I was on his show. In fact, another irony, today I was supposed to be on Scott Rogers' show. I was scheduled to be a guest at 10:30 this morning on Scott's show. Obviously, there will be no show. And Scott's legacy in this community as a whole was largely positive, but unfortunately it has come to light that he was living a life here and abroad that was subject to question. And hopefully something will be learned from this tragedy, and we will have no more incidents of this kind in which somebody is so publicly celebrated and privately troubled. 297-5633, your number, 877-217-5757, inkstershow@wrkf.org. Back in 90 seconds. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number. And we're joined at this time by Carly McCoy. McCord.
Hi, Carly. Yeah, Carly McCord. You got it.
I got it. Carly McCord is a graduate of LSU, the Manship School, as in last year, and of St. Michael's here in Baton Rouge. And she is somebody who's been in the public eye for some time. When you were 14 years old, you won a powerlifting championship, didn't you?
I did, yes. I was on the powerlifting team at St. Michael's. It was Bishop Sullivan at the time. And, I was actually, I placed second at Nationals. It was a, kind of a crazy victory.
And you're beautiful and somewhat petite. You must.
Yes, I am. I'm 5'2". My weight class when I was powerlifting was 97 pounds. So I'm not a very big person, but big things come in small packages.
You're right about that. At 97 pounds, you bench pressed how much?
180. That's how much. I mean, I couldn't do that now. If you were threatening my life, I couldn't even do that now.
180 pounds when you weighed 97. And I've said on this show, I think every talk show host in America should be able to bench press his or her weight. And I think you could still do 97 pounds.
Maybe. I'm hoping I could at least do 97. But if I'm not quite 97 anymore. But I'm hoping I could do right over 100 and get by with it. But 180 is... it's kind of dreaming still. I don't think I still have that strength.
Okay. Now, along the way, amid your educational accomplishments, and we're going to get to your fabulous job and your meteoric rise as a big star in Cleveland, you competed in beauty pageants, and five times in the Miss Louisiana pageant, correct?
Yes, sir. You know, it wasn't something that I did growing up. It was something that when I went to college, I got my first degree at Northwestern State University in Natchitoches, Louisiana, and they have a campus pageant, Miss Northwestern State University, Lady of the Bracelet, and I was like, you know what? I can compete. It was for a preliminary for the Miss Louisiana pageant for the Miss America organization where you have to have a talent. I am from a very musical family, and I was able to sing, you know, because I was trained. And I was like, you know, I can do this. And if I win, I get all kind of scholarship money. And, you know, like, I can graduate debt free. Like, how hard can it be? So I got up there, and I didn't win my first time. It took me two times to win my university pageant. But I ended up going to Miss Louisiana five times, and I never won. I was first runner-up twice, 2 years in a row. And I like to joke and tell people that I went to the Super Bowl twice, and I just pulled a Peyton Manning each time. I just I choked. I was the first. I say I was the first loser, so it's okay. I mean, but at the end of the day, I couldn't have asked for more from the organization. I learned so many wonderful skills, and it truly is like a huge part of my backbone. And I credit it so much when it comes to job interviews and to media interviews such as this one. I credit a lot that to the Miss Louisiana organization.
You were Miss Baton Rouge, Miss Shreveport, and Miss Lafayette, correct?
Yes, sir. Yeah, I was. I covered pretty much north, south, and central Louisiana. So, I accomplished more than I ever thought I would, and that was really the most important thing, was that I was able to leave getting more out of it than I went in with, and I'm able to keep what I got out of it with me for the rest of my life. So it was completely worth it.
Well, you have done spectacularly well, and those who say that these pageants are in some ways demeaning to people, I think you're an example that you have certainly matured as a result of being in the public realm and having the poise that it takes to be in these kinds of events.
Absolutely. And it's amazing because I'm a pure example of the fact that you don't have to win the big crown in order to get places in life. You can get everything out of it and more and use those skills for a lifetime, like I said before. And, if I would have won the big crown, if I would have won Miss Louisiana, it would have just been a bonus because I was able to get everything out of it that I possibly could. So, like you said, if people think that these pageants are demeaning, they have no idea what goes into it. They're truly incredible women.
Carly McCord, who is beautiful and talented and poised and articulate, but you work primarily in radio, don't you?
I do, yes. I moved to Cleveland last year after I didn't win Miss Louisiana on my last try and my last year of eligibility for the competition. I actually have been working for LSU's Tiger TV, and I was at Pro Day, and the general manager from the Cleveland Browns was there looking at Barkevious Mingo. He's defensive end now for the Cleveland Browns, but he was formerly LSU Tiger from West Monroe, Louisiana. And, he met me and he was impressed, and he messaged me he actually messaged me the night before Miss Louisiana and was like, you know, we have a job opening. Are you interested? And I went to bed that night, and I just remember thinking, if I win Miss Louisiana, I'll have a dream job. And if I don't win Miss Louisiana, I'll have a dream job. And I didn't win, and he asked me if I could be in Cleveland in 11 days. And I was like, yes. I didn't even ponder it. I didn't think. I didn't say, hold on a minute. Let me, you know, consult my family. I told him yes on the spot, and I was in Cleveland 11 days later. I said, I'll figure it out. And I was working for the Cleveland Browns. That's where I got my start in sports radio. And I started there, and then I quickly moved up in my career, and now I'm working for CBS Radio in Cleveland.
With the station that's the all sports station that carries the Cavs, the Browns, and the Cleveland Indians. Carly McCord, who is the pride of Baton Rouge, St. Michael's, and LSU. And this is an amazing story. The GM of the Cleveland Browns comes to town to get Barkevious Mingo, and he finds you. Imagine
exactly.
That.
Exactly. And, you know, he's no longer the general manager of the Cleveland Browns, so he's now with the New England Patriots. But we stay in great touch. Michael Lombardi, he's been such a mentor to me. He and his wife are fabulous people. And I couldn't be more grateful for, you know, him believing in me. And that's one thing I always tell people is always leave a good impression, because you never know who you meet. and you never know where it can take you. And I will always remember Michael Lombardi, because if it weren't for him, I wouldn't be where I am now.
297-5633 for Carly McCord. And I see you tweeted last night, Kenny Hill broke Manziel's single-game passing record with 511 yards as number 21 Texas A&M beats number 9 South Carolina 52-28. An amazing performance.
Oh, my gosh, yes. You know, is it Kenny football, Johnny who? It's so funny. You know, I'm in Cleveland. I was at the Browns game last night, where my heart is truly in the New Orleans Saints organization. I'm growing up in Louisiana, but I'm in Cleveland, so I'm, you know, naturally becoming a Browns fan. And these fans are so wonderful up here, Jim. I mean, they remind me a lot of the New Orleans Saints fans, and they're just so passionate, and they're really great, great organization up here. And I was at the game last night watching Johnny football, Manziel, and I'm getting updates on my phone reading the SEC game going on between South Carolina and Texas A&M, and I'm like, what is going on? Now, what is going on below the Mason-Dixon line tonight? I mean, this is a true example of SEC football. They are blowing it out the water. And a lot of people took South Carolina, and it was funny. I told people yesterday, I said, mark my word, Texas A&M is underrated because they lost Johnny Manziel and they lost their main receiver. I said, but they have a great quarterbacks coach. They have a great organization. They run a great program. And they're going to be impressive tonight. You just watch. And not only were they impressive, they blew South Carolina out of the water.
And Johnny Manziel, how's he doing?
You know, last night it was really interesting. He reminded me of the Johnny we saw in college last night. His running game is so good, and he's actually, last night, he really made some big plays to where he proved he can use his running game in the NFL. His passing game is still really weak. Now the Browns wide receivers are not the best of the bunch right now, and they're not catching balls either. But Johnny's chemistry and his sync with these receivers is not quite on target. He needs to work there a lot. But he is improving, and you can tell he's improving, and he's growing in this offense. But I do think it would be detrimental for the Browns to start him week one. I would like to think that they are taking the right move by starting Brian Hoyer at quarterback for week one. But overall, I've been able to watch Johnny grow in college, and you know, I went to LSU, and I was able to watch LSU beat him twice, which was, you know, fun. And I'm able to interview him up here all the time, and I'm able to see him play and grow. And it's a really great process to be able to witness. I think Johnny is very talented, and I think that he brings great things to Cleveland.
Carly McCord, the pride of Cleveland now, 297-5633, who grew up right here in Baton Rouge and went to Cleveland just over a year ago and is already a big star in America's heartland. Now, Carly, a listener, and it's one I was going to ask anyway, but a little prodding doesn't hurt. LeBron James, how's the reaction in your city, your new city, to the return of LeBron James?
It was absolutely incredible. You know, when I first moved up here, and you would ask people about LeBron James, that's one of the first things I would ask everybody when I first moved up here, because, I mean, who wasn't a LeBron James fan? I mean, of course, it was heartbreaking when he left Cleveland to begin with, whether you lived here or not, but how can anyone not appreciate him as an athlete? He's impeccable. I mean, he's the king of basketball at this moment. And it's so funny, when you first moved up here, so many people would tell you, I hate LeBron. We hate LeBron. We don't care if he comes back. And then there were some people that would say, oh, I hate LeBron, but I want him back. When he came back, it was like complete forgiveness swept Cleveland in the greater Cleveland area, Northeast Ohio. And it was like nothing had ever happened 4 years ago. It was like he had never left. People just completely jumped back and welcomed him with open arms. And this city has been so alive. Since Johnny Manziel was drafted here, it was like a circus came to town. But when LeBron said he was coming back, it was like a circus on steroids came to town. It's been an amazing experience to be able to experience it with these fans and to be able to see people who are so passionate about their city and about their sports teams witness such a big star coming back home to them again. So to answer the listener's question, it's been nothing less than amazing.
And it would be like Nick Saban coming back to LSU. People would forgive and forget in a real quick moment or two.
You couldn't have used a better example there, Jim. You're absolutely correct.
What about the Tigers? Yeah, you still follow LSU. They've got a tough game tomorrow, 5-point favorites over Wisconsin and the opener at Houston. What do you think?
I do still follow the Tigers. You know, my heart's in the SEC. My heart is in LSU. It's hard living up here in Big Ten country with all these The Ohio State University fans. I like to hang it over their head a lot that we beat them in the 2008 National Championship. I don't let them forget it. But I do follow them. I'm a big fan of Matt Moscone. I now prefer their review, 104.5 ESPN in Baton Rouge, and I listen to him daily, you know, to get my sports updates and my LSU updates, and he's a good friend of mine. And so I do follow it closely. You know, I read, and of course Twitter helps out, but I'm really excited about the Tigers here. I think they're kind of like it. I think they're going to be like an A&M to where they're really underestimated because they lost a lot of key players and a lot of offensive stars. And we are a young team, and I think that it is going to take a lot of growing, but we're a young team and we're a strong team. And I think our statistics and overall average statistics of the offensive line and the defensive line, they are definitely competitive. And I think that they're held to a high standard. And, of course, we have a great program with Les Miles and Cam Cameron. And I'm excited to see what the Tigers can do. We have great young talent.
Okay, so who wins tomorrow? Who wins tomorrow, Carly?
I think LSU is going to win. I think it's going to be a tough game. Melvin Gordon, he's a fantastic running back out there in Wisconsin. He's going to be hard to stop. But I think they were going to do it. I think I predicted a score, 28-18 LSU.
28-18 LSU, says Carly McCord, LSU graduate, now top sportscaster in Cleveland. And a listener, Barry, asks, were you on The Bachelor?
It's so funny, Barry. I was actually picked to be on The Bachelor. My friends nominated me to be on the show, and they sent me my final invitation about a week before I moved to Cleveland, and I turned it down to take my dream job with the NFL. So it was just, I knew that it would have kind of been like, you know, maybe a fun thing. It wasn't something I necessarily like was dying to do. I was really encouraged by friends, like I said. And I wanted my dream job more. Obviously that was more important to me in the long run. I'm very career oriented and independent. Young woman, and I strive for that first.
Well, have you been to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame?
I have. You know, that's a big tourist attraction here in Cleveland, and it's so cool and neat. There's so much memorabilia there, and so much new memorabilia there, and a lot of good events that go on there, and it's a fun place to go. Yeah.
But you're right now covering sports with Ernest, and Cleveland is a great sports city. And my guess is that you'll be covering Urban Meyer and the Ohio State Buckeyes as well.
Yeah, you know, I do a TV segment here on Fridays on the local NBC station, and we do some Ohio State stuff. And of course, you know, 92.3 The Fan, the sister station from Q104 that I work with, they cover the Ohio State all the time. And you know, it's mainly Cleveland sports, so it's Browns, Cavs, Indians. You know, we have an arena football team that was just first runner up in the Arena Bowl. They lost to the Rattlers. They had a great season, a great run. Very sports oriented town, like you said. Very sports state. High school football up here is like nothing I've ever seen before. It's incredible. And it's a really great thing to be a part of and a great thing to cover.
Mm-hmm. Who was your favorite professor at the Manship School?
I really like Professor Song. She taught my marketing and PR class, and she just made things really interesting. You know, she took a really different approach. She's very hands-on and relatable to the students, and I always appreciated how she would make things so relative to us.
Well, Carly, congratulations, and we hopefully will talk with you often in the days and years to come. And you're calling it 28-18 LSU over Wisconsin Saturday night in Houston. Okay, thank you.
Yeah, thank you all so much. Have a great day.
You too. And that's it for this week. For Michelle Southern, I'm Jim Engster. Thank you for listening, and stay tuned.
Podcasts of The Jim Engster Show are available at wrkf.org. The Jim Engster Show is produced in association with the Louisiana Radio Network and is copyrighted by WRKF for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without the written consent of WRKF is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of WRKF, its officers, and members.